Bucky Gleason, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jay.
So, Bucky, no longer at the Buffalo News, out of sports writing for now and maybe forever?
Yeah, it looks like it's forever. You know, I left the Buffalo News in May of 2018, and I really haven't looked back. You know, I think when you go into it, for different reasons. You know, you like writing, you like sports, you're combining the two. I had done a lot of different things before I came to the Buffalo News, did various things that didn't have anything to do with sports when I worked for the Associated Press. And so when you're doing it for a long time, it's a little bit weird when you know you're about to get out of it. You're not quite sure what the next step's going to be. But I had just about enough of it. And when it was time to go, I had a pretty good idea that it was time to go.
You know, I know there was, I've talked to Jerry Sullivan. He talked about losing his column and how that was, you know, something he just, it's something he didn't want to keep doing. He didn't want to keep going at the Buffalo News without that. Is that a similar situation for you?
Yeah, it was similar. You know, I mean, there are going to be people that were reassigned, and I was okay with the fact that I was going to be reassigned. I was going to go back and start covering the Sabres, which is something that I did for years and enjoyed very much. I love hockey, and you know, I enjoyed my time doing that. It comes with its challenges, but you know, there's a rhythm that comes with covering a long season, and you start to get accustomed to that rhythm, and it becomes a bit of a way of life. Whether it's the travel, you know, it's writing on deadline, it's you know, understanding what's going on in locker rooms around the league and the one that you're covering, and you really just kind of become entrenched in that job. So it wasn't even that. It was, to me, I didn't understand how removing Jerry Sullivan from his position was going to help the Buffalo News. I didn't get that at all. You know, I had a pretty good idea of who the most read people that were there, and he was certainly one of them. I didn't understand why you would want to remove him from that position when, you know, that was a guy, whether you liked him or didn't like him, agreed with him or disagreed with him, he was a guy that a lot of people read. And, you know, I was proud to work with Sully. I mean, he would lay it out there and was never compromised in his opinions. You might not agree with him. And in fact, Sully would be the first one to tell you, we had tons of arguments between the two of us. I mean, it was almost daily. You know, we were like two brothers or something that would go at it from time to time and then kiss and make up. But I had a ton of respect for him and really respected his work. So that didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And, you know, when I look back on it now, it was something that had been coming for me. I had spent, you know, probably 2 or 3 years, maybe more, wondering if this is what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. I had mentioned to Sully and others, you know, maybe it's time that I do something else and maybe I can be good at something else and try something different. So that was always in the back of my mind. And when they started making moves that I didn't think were going to help the newspaper or the newspaper industry or our newspaper in particular, that I just didn't really want to be a part of that. I had a harder time, you know, particularly in my last year or two, even just waking up and looking in the mirror, knowing what some of the things that were happening behind the scenes, and I just didn't want to participate in that. So for me, it was really, I left on principle. That was one aspect of it. You know, it was more that than it was necessarily being upset with the Buffalo News. It was about principle and the way that the media had changed and my place in the media and whether I still wanted to be a part of that.
Well, you know, you lead me into right there into my main point of this conversation. But before I get into that, which is how the media is changing and where it might be going, what are you doing now?
Well, I'm working at Catholic Health, which is an outstanding place to work. It has been I cannot say enough about how the transition's gone for me. I'm working in internal communications there. There's a very complex project going on. They are implementing Epic Systems technology, which people are going to really love once it's in. And it's cool to be part of a project where you know you're helping people. And, you know, the more I get involved in this project, and I'll explain it in a minute, Jay, the more proud I am that I'm doing it. Here you are, you can actually have an effect on patients' lives. Even me in internal communications gets the same feeling. Okay. You know, you buy into the mission that is Catholic Health. And it's an outstanding organization. It is all about trying to improve patient safety. And with this new technology, they're gonna improve patient safety, They're going to become more efficient. I mean, it's going to help nurses. It's going to help physicians. It's going to help patients more than anybody. And you say, well, how could technology do that? Well, what it does is it mainstreams all of your patient records. And, you know, right now, patient records are kept, you know, there's some over here and there's some over there. They have to tie a lot of little things together. There's patient history, because when the internet came about and it moved into healthcare, there were mechanisms in place, but they weren't all talking to each other.
Right.
And Epic Systems Technology, that brings everything under one roof. So, you know, Jay, you've been a patient, I'm sure. I've been a patient. You know, you get hospital bills sometimes and you're like, okay, well, you know, this is from my first visit here at this particular facility. And then I had this over here, and a lot of it doesn't make sense. Now Certainly. They're going to have single billing, for instance, right? You just go and you can pay one single bill. Everything's going to be listed. It's going to be a lot simpler, and it's going to be a lot safer. And I think that's the most important thing. And it's to be part of something like that, you know, considering my background and how, you know, where I was even just 3 years ago, you know, covering Bills and Sabres games or St. Bonaventure basketball games, which I loved. You know, it is pretty neat. It's been a really neat transition. I'm happy to be a part of it.
And as best you can, I mean, there might be a certain proprietary element here, but I mean, you're not a technology person.
No. I mentioned Jerry Sullivan before. He's the only one that I know that might be worse than me when it comes to technology. But, you know, we have an office over at Canisius College. It's on the third floor of their science building. And basically, it's like an incubator for tech brainiacs. And I am not a tech brainiac. And so my job, really, it's pretty neat, is I'm speaking with them constantly, and we are trying to share what's going on within the project with the rest of the organization. There's 10,000 people, 10,000 plus, that work at Catholic Health. And one of my jobs is really to put what they're doing into English, right? So
right.
There is a lot that I draw on, believe it or not, even from covering sports, with this job.
It is, sure.
I mean, you know, you're explaining at times complex situations that are going on in sports. There's only so much room in the paper. You have to make it clear. You have to be right. And, you know, at times you have to be fast. And if you're able to do those things and you can translate those things into the real world, which I've been able to do, then, you know, you can get a job in internal communications being a former sports writer.
Wow.
As crazy as it sounds, there's genius in it. Because I'm looking at things completely from the outside. I'm also not afraid to ask questions. I've been asking them my whole life.
Right.
So if something doesn't make sense to me, the same thing with the Bills or the same thing with the Sabres or anything else that I covered as a sports writer, this doesn't make sense. I'm speaking up. Why did you do this? Why is it this way? So those are the same similar questions that I'm asking people that have much lower profiles.
Wow.
And so I'm explaining that in part through their answers.
It's pretty impressive.
It's a lot of fun. Like, you know, you'd sit there and say, like, why is that fun? Well, they're not doing it. I'm doing it.
Right.
And so I can see that there's a lot of fun in it. And, you know, the people there are great. I trust everybody there. That's a bit of a shift, quite frankly. From what I've done in the past, it's kind of hard when you're covering teams and you feel like you're being lied to, and even harder when sometimes you go to the workplace and you feel like you're being lied to. I never feel like I'm being lied to at Catholic Health. I feel like I'm being helped, and I feel like I'm helping.
Nice.
So those are two qualities that I'm, you know, I think I got away from for a long time, being in sports, and you become a little bit jaded. Those things have been able to return, and I think that, you know, I mean, it actually, believe it or not, it may sound corny, it actually helps, like, the human spirit. You feel better about yourself.
I want to go back now to where we kind of left off before we went, what you're doing with Catholic Health, and that was you were getting into the idea about principles and things that were changing in the media. What, and now you can look back now at 18, almost 2 years ago now. What was changing? What has changed since that departure date from Buffalo News?
Well, you know, so much changed through the internet. You know, there are so many voices out there now that, you know, when I got into this business, into sports writing, you know, we had the Buffalo News, and there was a voice, I think, our newspaper, that kind of stood above the rest.
Certainly.
And, you know, you were entrusted with knowing what was going on. And I did my best to share what was going on. You know, the unfiltered truth really is what it was. you know, at times, was it filtered? Well, yeah. I mean, people are swearing in locker rooms. So, yeah. So I right. guess there was a bit of a filter. But I took an honest approach to it all the time. I look back with absolutely no regrets on the way that I handled things. I left on my own terms. So I'm at total peace with all of those things, all of those elements of sports writing. But what happened was there, when those voices started to become greater exponentially in terms of numbers, then you started to have other people that weren't around the situation that we were in, whether it was blogs or whether it was, you know, Twitter or whatever. All of a sudden you had people often anonymous having a voice. And I think that over time, people didn't understand the difference between all of the voices that were out there. It was just a lot of screaming. And, you know, one of my favorite things to do about, you know, when I was at the Buffalo News, it wasn't covering the Sabres and it wasn't covering the Bills. I told anybody who was willing to listen that covering those teams got in the way of what I really enjoyed doing. And what I really enjoyed doing was finding stories about people that nobody else knew and explaining their lives or their dilemma or their attachment to athletics or the challenges that they had or the pressure that they lived under. So to me, it was always about covering human beings and not necessarily covering the NFL or the NHL. And, you know, with so much emphasis now, you know, on mainstream, you know, mainstream media, there's just so much emphasis on the Bills and Sabres. It just, I just started to lose interest in it, all of it, in all of it.
You know, it's interesting. From a couple of your colleagues, I've heard of, they both have, they've mentioned how it became about clicks. Clicks on stories on the website.
Yeah.
What about that? I'm trying to formalize a question about this because as I'm hearing more about this, that people are clicking on the stories about the quarterback. There's maybe a handful of topics, it seems, that draw the clicks.
Yeah, that's not journalism to me. I know exactly what they were saying. It was, you know, the more clicks you get, the easier it is to sell advertising, right? I mean, that's basically what advertising was sold on. And I think that the more that the Buffalo News in particular and other places too, the more that you do that, the more you get away from real journalism. And, you know, the real journalism to me was telling the truth. It was identifying problems. It was putting things in perspective. It wasn't about, you know, whether or not somebody's going to click on my story. I quite frankly, Jay, I can tell you with all honesty, I never really cared if anybody read what I had to write. I really didn't. I just wanted to produce something that I would be proud of. It really didn't go beyond that. If they read it, fine. If they liked it, fine. If they didn't like it, fine. I really tried to take the same approach
but you would
to
admit
every story that,
that
I wrote.
But you would admit that that style resonated with readers.
I hope it did. I hope it did. I don't know.
I mean, you know, though. I mean, you've yeah. got response. You talk to people. I mean,
yeah.
you have people get mad at you.
Sure, of course. Sure. But I never one time did I ever write a story, you know, thinking, I'm going to get everybody wound up today. I'm going to criticize this person, and I'm going to get everybody wound up because I want clicks. I've never, ever once in, did I ever think about whether or not there were going to be clicks involved.
Yeah, I guess I'm more on kind of crossover on two different things. Though I'm just going back to your writing style and your approach to it. It was effective.
Yeah,
well, maybe you. Whether or not it clicked or didn't click, we're kind of moving back, maybe a little before that. That became the ultimate measure. You know that. I mean, you got the response from people. Well, again, whether it was something negative or was a story about a kid who was in a little league and people are helping him out to make sure that he could play, or a coach who was forgotten or retired or somebody who passed away, you know that those stories resonated.
Yeah, I like to think that they did, and I do think you're right. I mean, I think that I carved a pretty good niche there writing a lot of those stories that I mentioned before. You know, I think one of the things that happened too was that there was a generation gap, and I identified that probably, Jay, it has to be 10 years ago. Where I thought that younger people, younger consumers of the Buffalo News had a different attitude than older consumers. And what I found was that younger consumers, in general, they didn't want you criticizing their guy. They were fans. And older people, they wanted the truth. They weren't worried about their guy. And I think you can go back, Jay, and you're old enough to remember this. If you go back to the Bills in the 80s, in the early to mid-80s, when they had those 2-14 seasons, there were like 22 people or 22,000 people sitting in that stadium.
Yep.
And they would never do that now. You know, that stadium is packed every single week. for every game. It doesn't matter how they've done. And really, I mean, although attendance at times has fallen off for the Sabres, there's a lot of people there. You know, when you look at just how poor that they've been over the years, I think that our generation was less tolerant of that.
Interesting.
And I think that a younger generation today is more like, you know, these are our guys. We need to support our guys. And I never really cared either way. I was just there to tell the truth.
So back to what we call it, the click mentality for a little bit here. Beyond it impacting journalism, do you see from a business model standpoint it becoming almost consuming itself, that it gets to the point where there's only one topic that gets clicked on?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if you look at the attention that is paid to the Buffalo Bills, I mean, it's Exhibit A, right? I mean, I hate to sound like the old man here, but when I was a kid and there were two newspapers, we knew a lot about the great high school players in our area. We knew a lot about the great college players in our area. And we knew a lot about the Bills and we knew a lot about the Sabres, but it wasn't skewed to the degree that it is now. Now, you can't tell me that. And also, newspapers back then, they would drive the news. They understood it was their job to determine what was important and what wasn't important to the consumer. Now, I think that is backwards. Mm-hmm. I think that the consumers are saying, here's what we want to read, and newspapers are listening to it. And again, when you do that and you're making those decisions based on money, I think that you've been compromised. And the minute that you've been compromised, that's when you have to start thinking about whether or not you're doing it right. And if you start to think that often enough, you start to come away, you know, thinking that, yeah, this is not what I signed up for. I signed up for, you know, what was a different world. It was different journalism. It was real journalism to me. And now it's barely recognizable. So then you have to make a determination. And when I say you, I mean me. I had to make a determination, you know, do I really want to be a part of this? And the answer ultimately was no.
What is lost, or what has been lost, or if it has there been something lost, in the fact that we don't have, well, there was a time when we had two newspapers, and then we have one still here in town. But is there something lost with all this, that the newspaper had a certain ethos in this community that it might still have? I'll leave that to someone else to describe. But, you know, are we losing that sense? Is there something that was important about that newspaper that, and again, whether it's sports or any other element of the community, if we lose that, if that goes away, I mean, are we going to be less for it?
I think so. And, you know, the physical newspaper was one thing. Again, we're talking about a generational gap. And, you know, if you knew somebody whose name was in the paper, you know, in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s before internet, then, I mean, you bought 50 copies of it. You called grandma. You called all the aunts and uncles. And you said, you know, hey, did you see little Johnny's picture in the paper today? He's right on page D7, right? And they would go buy 50 copies. And then they would share them with all their friends at work. And it was kind of cool. You know, I have sons that are athletes now. And, you know, their names have been in the paper. And I don't even know if they even look. I don't think it matters with them at all, to them at all.
Wow.
And I, you know, That's a considerable shift. You know, there was kind of like an allure, I think, that came with it. Even in my case, you know, it was cool to be writing columns that were in the paper that you knew, you know, people were going to read. Now, a minute ago, I said I wasn't really concerned with whether or not people were reading them or not. You know, and what I wasn't really concerned was their opinion of what I was writing.
Gotcha.
But I must admit, it was pretty cool, you know, when somebody would tell you, like, hey, you know, we have a column that you wrote from, you know, 3 years ago. It's sitting on our refrigerator, right? So, you know, that makes you feel pretty good that if you have that impact that somebody actually took the time to cut it out. I think if that goes away, yeah. You know, right now when I look at newspapers, especially when you take away the physical newspaper itself, the paper, then really what it is, it's becoming one website among many websites, a lot of them writing about the same thing. And unless you're the New York Times or the Washington Post or, you know, pick a newspaper that you really respect, then it's hard to differentiate for the local newspaper from some of the online coverage that's out there. It just is.
Hmm.
And I don't know that that's healthy. There are a lot of people I see online, and I'm not reading nearly as much as I did, but there are a lot of people that were irresponsible. They really didn't know what they were doing when it came to writing online columns. And, you know, that is a craft. That's something that takes a long time to understand, to develop. And I think that the more that online presence, there are very few just online people that are really good. Now, you know, you look at The Athletic, Tim Graham is outstanding. John Vogel's outstanding. You know, these guys are top notch.
Right.
That's a particular website that's different from the rest.
Certainly. And I do want to ask you about that. But just back to the column. The column always looks so simple when it's done, doesn't it?
Oh, true.
Right? It's all printed out. It's just some short paragraphs. Maybe, 20 paragraphs, 25 paragraphs? What was the typical column?
Well, about 1,000 words was usually what I was looking at.
1,000 words. And you had to get right around that mark.
You started with zero every day, right?
Started with zero.
And, you know, writing is tough. And, you know, I try to tell people that, you know, people used to fret over the 500-word composition that they had to write in high school.
Right.
You know, try cranking out 1,000 words in 25 minutes.
Right.
And sometimes that's what you're up against as a columnist. And not only that, you have to make sure that it makes sense. It has to be accurate. It better be at least, you know, somewhat entertaining. You better have something to say, you know, all of those things. And to be able to encapsulate, you know, something off of a hockey game. You know, think about what time the game is played and what time the deadlines are. You know,
what was the deadline usually?
The deadline when I left there was like 9:45. So, you know, if the game starts at 7 o'clock, you bet you're writing during the third period. There's an old saying among hockey writers that says, you know, somebody will say, "Well, did you see something that, you know, whoever score in the third period?" And the response is, "Of course I didn't see it. I was covering the game." So if you're covering the game, you're probably not watching the third period, but you learn how to become, if you do it enough times, you know, you learn how to become a really fast, accurate writer. And as you get older and you gain perspective, a lot of that just kind of seeps into the columns that you're writing.
Wow.
But it is a craft, and it takes a while.
Yeah. I don't envy. I mean, I admire it, but I can't imagine having to do that. That's for sure. What about like a sports writer who's starting out today? What are your thoughts to them?
I would tell them to get out of the business. I've been asked that question by aspiring sports writers. I mean, I've had, I don't know how many people email me and, you know, and I spoke at high schools, you know, or colleges or whatever. There was always somebody that said, you know, "Hey, I read your stuff for a really long time. It was really cool. I would like to do that." And my advice to them was that, you know, if you're really, really passionate about it, then nobody's going to be able to stop you. But if you have any doubts about it whatsoever, then you probably shouldn't do it. I don't know that there's enough, you know, it's just changed so much. Now there's like access journalism, which was another problem that has kind of crept into regular journalism. And that is, you know, we're going to give you access and, you know, in return, we're expecting some positive news here. You know, the old fogies, the Sully or me or whatever, that would go in there and mix it up. It wasn't about that. It wasn't about access. Access, that was expected. You know, access was them being responsible and being transparent. And I think that there is a form of access journalism that you see nowadays where they roll out somebody or they're hiding other players that aren't ready or willing or whatever, can't handle sharing their opinions.
Is there something the consumer needs to know about what they're getting from it's sports journalism or whatever you want to call it? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a general sense, a lot of it has been compromised in recent years. And I'm not saying that because I'm not doing it, but I will tell you this. I've noticed it more since I've been out of it. You look at it from a different view and you understand the business behind journalism. And my antenna is always up like, ooh, I was watching the game on TV and I saw this and that's not even mentioned. And why is that? So is that because people feel compromised? Did I see something that they missed? I guess that's possible too. But I don't think that it's as hardcore or as accurate as it used to be. I think that, you know, when I look at it and I try to explain to people, the crime in this isn't what's in the newspaper or what's on TV or what's on the radio. What you're missing is what's not. That's the problem, It's what's not in the paper, what's not being mentioned on TV, what's not being mentioned on radio. That, to me, is the greater crime.
Mm. You're not giving us the most hopeful conversation here.
Well, I'm giving you the truth, and that's all I know how to do. So, you know, I do have hope. You know, I do have hope, and maybe eventually it will circle back, where people will realize that over the course of time that print journalism, newspapers in particular, got away from doing it right and demand that it's done right. You know, maybe there's an ebb and flow to this. I have my doubts. I do. But I do hope that it will someday turn around and become what it was and be more responsible and hold people accountable and share opinions. You know, you're seeing fewer and fewer opinions out there. And I don't know. I mean, are you telling me that there's no problems? Let's take sports out of it. You're telling me there's no problems in the city of Buffalo that don't need to be addressed by a columnist? I mean, I think a columnist, part of what they do is they help shape the thinking of a community. And they're kind of like, they adopt, you know, yeah, you know what? This guy here, he's right. Or the opposite, even. You can shape your opinion by having the opposite opinion.
Right.
But I think that opinions matter. And I think that they're missed.
You kind of stole my question there, but I was going to say, beyond sports, this trend that you're seeing in the journalism business, it doesn't sound like it's going to be good for anybody, as they say.
Well, I mean, that's my fear. You know, I mean, if my hope was that it was going to turn around, there's greater fear that I'm right about this, and that newspapers aren't going to be around for the long haul. I was warned about it when I was in college by the great and late Charlie Adair, who was, you know, my top professor, and he warned us that, you know, they may not be around, and if they are going to be around, then they're going to have, you know, an entirely different look. And, you know, he passed away before what he said actually happened. And, you know, whether it's because of technology or whatnot, and Jay, I don't want to get the wrong idea where you say, you know, well, you know, technology has ruined newspapers. It didn't ruin them all. You know, if you read the other newspapers, if you are a fan of journalism and you appreciate the Washington Post, and I don't want to get into a liberal conversation here. That's not what it's about. They just continue to go about it the right way. Same with the New York Times. They just continue to go about it the right way. And when I say the right way, I think, you know, by and large, in an honest way. You know, they're approaching it the way that you should.
And they're putting resources into it.
Oh, they're pouring resources into it. You know, I've had a conversation with somebody not too long ago, probably about 3 weeks or a month ago, that, you know, I wonder if the New York Times or the Washington Post will ever be so national that they start putting reporters in every city. And you'll have, you know, the New York Times, Buffalo, or maybe you'll have the Washington Post, Buffalo, as crazy as that sounds. Is that at all possible that they could start and be able to print, take their model and be able to print their paper in a localized area and have people buy it? I wonder if that's the case. And for years wondered, you know, what if somebody else started another newspaper in Buffalo? Would it be able to survive? And, you know, I think it's too risky. I don't think that you're going to see that.
Right. Far too much to put up for.
Well, if it was going to happen, it would have happened probably about 20 years ago.
Right.
And not now.
Right.
I think now, you know, based on trends in the industry, I think that you're looking at going, geez, I don't know if I want to get involved in something like that.
We'll try to finish on a not necessarily higher note, but a different kind of note. Still enjoy sports?
You know, it's funny. I got into this business because I loved sports as much as anybody that you've ever met. And I knew, I was almost encyclopedic with baseball, you know, in the 70s. You know, I could probably to this day rattle off like the 75 Reds World Series starting lineup. I mean, I'm not going to do that, but, you know, we could start talking about Johnny Bench catching and Tony Perez. You know, we could talk about Concepcion and Rose and, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I can go through that. And those things, those are still with me. What I came to realize as I got older was that I really enjoyed competition. It's sports, yes, but I really enjoyed competition. I enjoyed watching how people performed under pressure. And when I, you know, walked away from sports writing, when you've had like, you know, 15 cookies every single day of your life, you know, and then you stop having cookies. What a terrible analogy. I mean, come on, I got to be better than that. But
you get a couple free edits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just that's okay. Right. No, you don't need but to edit it. That's fine. That's what I said. But you know, when you do something that is that much fun, but you do it and it becomes a job, and you walk away from that, you're not dying. So, I don't have a dog in the fight anymore. So I will sit down and I'll watch, you know, two college basketball teams that I know nothing about because I like the purity of the game. I love high school sports because I like the purity of the game. You know, but I'm not sitting there breaking down the Bills every Sunday, and I'm not, you know, I don't know how many. I bet I've watched less than 60 minutes of Sabres hockey this year. I'll glance or I'll flip on the TV. You know, I still like to think that I can identify what's wrong. I know I can identify what's wrong. And, you know, and that's about it. But I don't, you know, I haven't missed it, you know, and I think that that's really what the biggest question is, the biggest gauge is, and I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, do you miss it? Well, you know, there are times that I miss being part of the action, but I really don't miss that because I remember what it was like when I left.
But at the same time, you did it for 30 years?
Yeah, well, close to it. You know, I was working at the Buffalo News for 22 years, and I worked at the Associated Press before that, and I'm even going back to my days at the Olean Times Herald. And I had a brief stint at the Niagara Gazette, which all of which are, I'm sure, forgettable for most people. Yeah, I mean, you know, you do that for 30 years. It was great. And I never took it for granted, or I tried to never take it for granted, because I always thought, you know, this is going to end at some point, probably before I'm ready to retire. And as I saw the shifts in the industry, you know, unfold, I think that, you know, that reality became more and more clear. And you have to come to grips with that. And I did.
Bucky Gleason, thanks for your work. Thanks for your time coming by and talking to us today.
Thanks for having me, Jay. It's been a while since I've been around a microphone, so you know me. If you give me a mic long enough, you better sit down and
sit back and let the tape roll.
That's right.
All right, let me...